So I always start these podcasts off with asking the invited guests to tell a joke. So today, on this episode of Cuts University, we have the distinguished gentleman, Mr. Chris Bell. Chris Bell also goes by Mr. Blue Hat, correct?
Yeah, go by.
I know. Okay.
Texas Blue Hat Bell. Texas Blue Hat Bell.
Texas Blue Hat Bell. Okay. Now, I know Chris as a songwriter, musician, and artist from the House of Blues with a band called Admission Possible.
Admission Possible.
And in that band, you have members from a multitude of different areas, correct?
Yeah. Basically, we started at the University of Houston downtown, playing right in our office, and one thing led to another. We're in the Office of Admissions, thus the name Admission Possible, a.k.a. Practicing Musicians as well. That's how you can find us on social media, typically under Practicing Musicians.
Practicing Musicians, okay. So like I said, I start this Cuts University podcast off by saying, Chris, tell me a joke. So tell me a joke.
All right. Well, this joke I heard many years ago when I was a student in New Orleans. I heard it on the radio. Now, again, it's New Orleans radio, so keep that in mind. But people a lot of times ask me where I'm from. And this joke kind of plays into that. Didn't know it then, but I use it now. So think about a guy duck hunting. And he happens to be duck hunting, in this case, in Louisiana. Don't know if you know much about duck hunting, but, you know, typically you need a license. And this old game warden comes upon him and, you know, think about him being an old southern game warden with that southern dialect, which is what I have, a.k.a. My Louisiana roots. So this old game warden comes upon him, and he sees that this hunter has bagged a lot of ducks. And he walks up to him, and he says, "Hey, boy, you got a lot of ducks there. I hope you got some duck hunting license." And the man said, "Yes, sir, Mr. Game Warden, I do." So he picks up one of the ducks. He sticks his finger in the duck's rear end. He pulls it out. He looks at it, and he says, "Hey, boy, this here's a Florida duck. You got a Florida duck hunting license?" And hunter says, "I sure do. I sure do have a Florida duck hunting license," and he shows it to him. Well, the game warden picks up another duck. He does the same thing. Looks at his finger and says, "Hey, boy, this here is a Mississippi duck. You got a Mississippi duck hunting license?" Hunter says, "I sure do, officer. I sure do have a Mississippi duck hunting license." And he does it two or three more times. And finally, he says, "Hey, boy, you got all these duck hunting licenses. Just where in tarnation are you from?" And the hunter turns around, pulls down his pants, and says, "You tell me."
And that's exactly how we're starting off this podcast. I want to welcome everybody to Cuts University, the only place on the planet where you can get a free degree in common sense. Teach something, learn something. We do it all here, and you can't be lost. We're going to get you found. Trust me. Oh, man, I'm so excited right now. This is the second episode where someone has actually told me a joke. Most of the time I'm telling the jokes, and my jokes suck. That's the whole key to it. I'm not a good storyteller. I'm not a good joker. My brother is, but that's what I do. Great way to segue into the conversation. So, like I said, I'm sitting here with the distinguished gentleman, Mr. Chris Bell. I want Chris to do a different introduction of himself. So tell me, tell my audience, tell the people who you are, where you're from, and a little bit of background.
So I'm happy to be here with you today. I am a sixth-generation Texan. My family goes back 100 and, oh, my goodness, we got here in 1850, 1851 from places like Mississippi and South Carolina. And
1851?
Yeah, so we go back a little bit in northern Alabama. So I'm a proud sixth-generation Texan, but I've lived in other places. I mentioned I went to school in New Orleans. I've got rich Creole Cajun DNA from St. Landry's Parish near Opelousas. But born and raised here, lived other places, New Orleans, which certainly has a rich musical history.
Right.
Lived and admitted in Washington, D.C. While I was in college, and lived 6 years in Austin, which also has a rich music tradition there on 6th Street.
Indeed it does.
So Texas is home. Moved back to the Houston area from Austin about 25 years ago, settled in the Spring, Texas area, and here I am.
Wow. Okay, you mentioned that you went to school in D.C.
Well, I did a congressional internship in Washington, D.C.
Congressional internship.
I did a congressional internship there when I was a student at Texas Southern. I started my education at Xavier University in New Orleans.
Okay.
And ended up coming back home to finish, change majors, and finished at Texas Southern University. And while I was there, Mickey Leland, the former late great humanitarian congressman, Mickey Leland of the 18th District, started a program where students from several of the universities in the city had a chance to apply, interview, and if accepted, spend a semester working in Congress. And so I did that. Great experience. That was during the second Reagan administration. So I'm telling you a little bit about my age.
It's all good.
It was a great experience. And I've been working in the political theater since my days at Xavier. And that's been four decades now. So wow. I wear a couple of hats.
Okay. So you've been in politics or around politics for at least four decades.
Exactly.
Wow. That's a great segue into part of this discussion. I really want to touch on the musical scenes from Austin to D.C. back to Texas. I mean, well, I guess Austin is Texas. But Louisiana, Texas, the differences, the nuances, and what's different about the two. So what genre of music do you gravitate mostly to?
Well, I tell you, I grew up in a house that was a Motown house. My brother, who was 10 years older than me, loved anything Motown. You know, I learned about the Dales. I learned about the Four Tops. His favorite go-to band was the Temptations.
Gotcha.
And likewise, my mother. My mother also liked that genre of music. Of course, she was a little older. But loved Gladys Knight, loved Patti LaBelle. And then not only that, I lived right across the street from, we would call it a lounge or a beer joint.
Okay.
Where, the, you know, Johnny Taylor, Joe Simon, all the blues great, you know, were on the jukebox that you had to put a quarter in at the time. So that is what I was originally immersed in. Here in Houston.
Now, did you do any type of music back in New Orleans?
Man, I didn't do any music. I mean, I sang in the chapel choir, but that was the extent of what I did. Listen, my brother, who's passed away now, was the musician in the family.
Okay.
He was the singer. He was in groups. You know, he did that whole stand on the corner doo-wop thing.
Really?
You know, and
just like the movie.
Yeah, just like the movie. And so if anybody was going to be a musician in the family, it was going to be him.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Because if from the first time that I seen you perform at the House of Blues, I would have never thought that was the case. And that's not knowing your brother. That's just knowing you and meeting you for the first time. And it really just blew my mind, honestly. And during that time, I think you performed this song called Possum Walk. And first time I heard it, I said, you know what? That's a dope song.
Yeah.
And just being a music producer, I'm hearing certain things and I'm like, oh, man, no one's doing anything like that. And like right now, I'm getting goosebumps, right? Because I'm going back to that first time I heard it. And I kept asking myself, I need to ask Chris. Remember to ask Chris if that's recorded. Yeah. And what are they doing with it? That's what the question was.
Gotcha.
So now I'm asking you, is that recorded?
No. So it's not recorded. No, you know, although I hadn't been in.
Give me the back walk, the backstory of the Possum Walk.
I'm going to give it to
okay.
you. Okay. Even though I hadn't been a performer for most of my life, I've always loved to write poetry, whatever. Consider myself to be a above average writer. So Possum Walk. My father is from Walker County, Texas, Huntsville, Texas. And they have a road. It's FM 1374. But most people call it Possum Walk. And that name, there's several different stories about how that name came to be. So growing up, my father used to take me to Huntsville, down deep in Huntsville, not on the prison side, not on the Sam Houston State side. I'm talking about on the countryside. We have property there right in the middle of the Sam Houston National Forest. And we'd go down there and hunt and fish and bond as father and son. And the name of the road was Possum Walk. So, one day I just had this idea. I needed to write a song talking about my relationship with my father, which wasn't always a good relationship. He had issues coming out of the Korean War, issues with alcohol. And so it was not always positive. But what was positive is when we went down Possum Walk Road. And so that song actually talks about three generations. It talks about me and my father's relationship, and then I have a verse towards the end of that song where I bring in my son. So it's a generational song. It's got a country bent to it, too. My father was, for all practical purposes, a cowboy. Hmm. He loved going to the local rodeos. I'm not talking about the big one here at Reliant or NRG, but those local rodeos. And he dressed like a cowboy and rode horses. And so this was a song to reconnect with him and that part of my life.
Had he ever had a chance to hear it?
No. Dad passed away when I was on my way to school in New Orleans. I was about 18.
Okay.
And
wait a minute. How old is this song?
This is a relatively new song. Less than a year old. I've written several songs, and we've probably sung maybe a half dozen of them.
Okay. Yeah. Wow. So tell me about practicing music at Mission Possible and some of the members that are the constants in that group.
So our musical director and really the gentleman who is the creator of this whole concept, Spencer Lightsey. And Spencer and I work together. Spencer plays the bass, writes music like me, and does a lot of the arrangements for the pieces that we do. And then over time, we've pulled in some more people who work at the university, who play other instruments, and then Spencer performs at his church, and we've pulled in some members of the church. So we've got a list of people that, when we're doing gigs and those types of things, we put out a call and see who's available. Yeah, but basically, it's Spencer Lightsey and myself. We form the core.
There you go. And I think the time that you guys extended the invitation to my son, Chalky, to come and play.
Oh, man. We can talk about that.
that was a highlight of a dad just to see that his son is like, okay, wow. You want to put your son in the water to see if he can swim, and then when he shows you he can swim efficiently, you're like, oh, wow, okay, great. Do your thing. So I'm pretty sure I never had a relationship with my father. So everything that I'm trying to be and what I'm working to become comes from that. They say you're usually a product of what you didn't or did have growing up. And what I didn't have was that male stability in the family as a father coming home, that you're coming home to. I always had my mom, who was the staple but just never having that male figure there all of the time, what I wanted to provide with my son and my daughter and my family, and just to have a family, a unit. And I'm pretty sure this is one of many conversations that we're going to have, because we highly encourage fathers to be an integral part of their children's lives, because a lot of us are absent, and those that have grown up with absentee fathers, you know how impactful that can be. Yeah. And so I try to be, I don't know how this has happened, but I've become that neighborhood patriarch where the kid down the street who lives with his grandmother, he comes down to Uncle Cut's house, or, you know, and, you know, it's funny to see your kids, your children's friends have a big influence on their behavior.
Right.
But when they see, when those friends see that their structure here, it's amazing to see them get in line with that structure. When you start, yes, sir, no, sir. The way you respect different individuals, especially the women that are in your life, it's yes, ma'am, no, ma'am. It's a different dynamic. And when you were just mentioning that about your dad, I started reflecting. And then for you to commemorate that with a song says a lot. So when I see my own son participating with seasoned musicians, I'm just like, this is bananas. You know, it's a big deal to me. So but I'm familiar with Spencer. Spencer is a former athlete as well.
Right.
Spencer. He's a former Spencer, ran track, right?
Yeah. Spencer's from Long Island, New York.
New York.
his dad was a baseball coach, and Spencer got a cross-country track scholarship to come to U of H back really in the heyday when U of H had some great runners at the time.
Burners.
Great athletes.
Yeah.
And Spencer's grandfather played bass with Duke Ellington.
Get out of here.
Yeah, Spencer's grandfather played bass.
What?
Matter of fact, I think he's got one of those bass, upright basses now. And, of course, he plays the four-string bass guitar, but he's also been dabbling with that upright bass. But, yeah, so he's got some music
wow.
DNA, you know.
Wow, that's crazy. I was telling my son, I said, you don't realize it, but you come from a family of entertainers. My wife, I've been married 18 years now. Her great grandmother is the late Loretta Mae Akins. Hmm. And most people would know her as Moms Mabley.
Yeah.
And so when you start finding things like that out, you're like, what? Because I always tell my wife, I said, you're a closeted comedian. You're a closeted actor, and you don't even know it. You just perform on cue without someone giving you a call to action. It's just there. And she's like, I don't see it, but everybody else sees it. And so when I see my son and I see my daughter, I'm like, maybe that's the part of the gene that I didn't have that they have. Yeah. And so to see him doing this thing is just incredible.
Well, it's interesting. You know, over the last several years, I've gotten into looking up my DNA.
Okay. So you took the test?
Oh, man, I've taken four tests.
So where are you from?
Yeah, right. Because people used to always ask me, what are you? And I've already indicated that I've got family from Louisiana. But I found out that on my mother's paternal side, there was a very famous Texas musician. Guy's name was Dickie McBride. And so that whole side of the family, I found out, they were musicians, and they still are. They're up in Central Texas. There's an area that they play once a month. It's a jamboree.
Really?
That they some of the family members play at. I've not played up there yet. But yeah. Yeah, once you start digging into those things,
right.
you just never know,
right,
about your DNA and your heritage and who did what, and so it's still an evolving story. But yeah, excited to find out that information.
It's amazing that you brought that up, and I know you mentioned earlier you said you were a sixth generation Texan. Yeah. And your family came here in 1850.
Early 1850s, yeah, both sides.
And just in a recent podcast, I was speaking with my mother, and she traced our heritage back to 1804. Wow. With I think a 10-time great grandfather who was 4 years old at the time. His name was Washington White. And Washington was his name, and he took on the plantation owner's last name. Yeah. That's how we became the Whites.
Right.
And I'm like, are you serious? This is how that works? Okay, I'm learning history all across the board today. And so when you started thinking back 1804, you said 1850s, I'm like, this is incredible. I don't know any of this. How many other people are out there that don't know their history, their heritage, because most of our history has been erased, yeah, or they've tried to hide it from us to the point where you're left wondering and trying to figure things out.
Exactly.
So that actually brings us into this part of the conversation where you start talking about the importance of this election, the importance of voting, and why should we vote, what's in it for us, and what's the value of our vote. Now, I remember you mentioned earlier that you're four generations deep into political theater. So,
yeah, it's a valid question. And, you know, when you think about, let's talk about the intersection of music and politics and okay, human rights and civil rights. And just over the decades that music has played, when we look at the protest songs, when those were marching, you know, those individuals
James
were marching,
Brown.
Yeah, in the 50s and the 60s. And we look at Sam Cooke's
right,
a change is going to come.
Right.
And, you know, We Shall Overcome. That's a song that I learned in elementary school that, believe it or not, each time I can't sing it because I start to cry because that song is so deep. And, you know, just the list goes on. And then, you know, we've had, you mentioned James Brown, and we've had so many individuals who have been part of various movements.
Right. Even Marvin Gaye.
Marvin Gaye.
What's going on?
All of that. And those are period pieces. I mean, you know, what Marvin Gaye did with Inner City Blues.
Right.
And actually, Marvin got pushback from Berry Gordy.
I remember part of that story.
You know, the story, because they didn't want, you know, Marvin was a crooner, you know, of the Sam Cooke genre.
Right.
And they didn't want him going in that direction. But, of course, the movement at the time led him to do that. You look at the Temptations, who got away from the doo-wop and did Bowl of Confusion, as an example.
Right.
You know, and
Cloud Nine.
Cloud Nine, right? And so you can look at so many different songs. And one of the things that I'm really grateful about my brother, he introduced me to a group of guys called the Last Poets.
Oh, man. And okay. Run with it. Because I came into contact with the Last Poets in college in the 90s. And yeah,
and they predated
rap
and hip hop. But those guys were from New York City, and some classic songs on the subway. The Revolution will not be televised. And that's actually Gil Scott-Heron who did that. But I'm just trying to think of some of the other classics songs that they did.
Well, it's funny that those two people you mentioned, the Last Poets and Gil Scott-Heron, was highly influential on the people that influenced my generation. So Public Enemy with Fight the Power.
Public Enemy, exactly.
They sampled all of those guys. And when you think of it's funny how great music transcends time. So I'm talking about a song that came out in 89, 90, and we're still talking about the same thing now.
Yeah.
You're still talking about a change is going to come because we're still waiting for that change to happen. A lot of things have changed and I would say mildly progressed, but not to the extent of where I should be talking about the same thing that someone in the 60s, 70s, 80s talked about.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's kind of where I get frustrated with where things are. And and I'm not an undecided voter, but for the audience, there are a lot of people who are undecided that are like me that are saying, I just listened to Ice Cube, and Ice Cube said something very poignant. He said, what is our vote worth?
Right.
What are we voting for? And what are we getting in return? Because for so many years, we've just voted blindly and given it away. Yeah. And I talked about this on a previous podcast. What I see happening in different communities, say the Hispanic community, they don't just vote. They show up with checks that are in the millions of dollars. So if I'm coming to you and I'm supporting your campaign, I'm not just bringing you a vote. I'm bringing you a $30 million campaign check. If I'm of the LGBTQ community, I want change affected. How do you affect change? You have to create policy that turns into law, right? But I'm not coming to you with our vote. I'm coming to you with our vote in a check. We, for the longest, as when I say us as black people, we've always just given our vote, never the money that's involved with politics. And understanding how politics works, it's a reason why you have lobbyists to affect policy and change. So I asked the question, what is the point of us voting if we're not getting anything for our vote or holding them accountable?
It's a good question. And you know, you have today a lot of young people who say, well, I'm not going to vote. You know, I don't see any change. But when we think about the Breonna Taylors of the world and the George Floyds of the world, and, you know, how they become martyred.
Right.
And, you know, we just lost John Lewis. This past summer, I took a trip purposely driving from Texas to Atlanta, Georgia, where my daughter stays and is in the practice of law. And, you know, I could have flown easily, but I said, I'm going to drive because I wanted to drive through the South. You know, I wanted to.
So you drove through Georgia?
Oh, I mean,
I've driven through Georgia.
And one of the things that I did, I stopped at Tuskegee. But one of the poignant moments, man, of that trip coming back was stopping in Selma, Alabama, and walking across the Edmund Pettus Bridge and stopping in the middle and just doing what you saw on the movie, Selma, just taking a knee and thinking about all of those individuals who suffered at the hands of bigots and racists, the government, law enforcement. And we've seen the pictures.
Right.
And just taking all of that in, you know, and I've been, like I said, politically active. My mother, I blame that on my mother. My mother was politically active. She was active in the community. You mentioned your house now, which is a magnet. Well, that's what our house was. Our house was a magnet. Everybody came to our house because we always had food. You could always sleep at our house. She was a den mother. She was a PTO president.
Wow.
She was an organizer, you know.
Do you think that's where you take on a lot of those?
Yeah, no doubt. That's where my politics started at. And we would have those discussions. She grew up in Houston with local politicians. And so I got embedded in that culture and have somehow managed to stay in it. I'm currently an elected precinct chairperson, but I've been an elected school board member. And I tell you, I remember when I first voted, you know, back in 1980. And at the time in Texas, you had those booths that you would walk into and the curtain
pull the curtain
closed, right? You know? And it was a big experience. But man, I was so proud that I was able to go in there and cast a vote,
right?
You know, and so I would encourage the young people today, those who don't think their vote matters, it matters. Even today, they started hearings. The Senate Judiciary Committee started hearings today on Amy Barrett,
who Supreme Court.
For Supreme Court.
Right.
And voting matters. Voting matters.
Now, we know it matters. The question is, I think what's happening is a lot of the youth are saying, well, what does it count for? Because at first, I'll be honest with you, when I thought about voting, and I've always voted since I've been able to vote, you never see it working the way it's supposed to work. You have an electoral college that's antiquated and outdated in my book. And then you have the popular vote. And when I think of voting, the first thing I think about is the presidency. But I'm never, ever thinking about local.
Yeah.
And really everything that affects me is local.
That's right.
But most people don't see it like that. Yeah. Your judges, who the people that make decisions on exactly. whether or not if you get stopped for DUI, do you get a chance to have that waived, or being able to take a class to have that exactly. deferred. If you have spousal issues and child support comes into play, you're going to court now and you have a new panel of all female judges that have right. secured seats throughout Harris County. Which is incredible.
Yeah.
It also means that you can't come in here as a man and playing these games. They're not playing with you. So most people don't see it from that perspective. They see it from, I'm voting for the president, and if I don't like the president, I'm not going to vote.
Yeah.
And what tripped me out last time is that he lost the popular vote in 2016 by almost 5 million.
Yeah.
But the Electoral College is what put him into the White House.
Exactly.
So what's different? If we go out and vote and he loses the popular vote by 10 million, there's still a chance that this guy who's completely destabilized the U.S. across the board, there's still an opportunity that he will have another 4 years.
Well, here's what former Speaker of the House from Massachusetts, Tip O'Neill, said, famous quote, he says, all politics is local. And you hit on something. When you go into the ballot box, when you go into the booth, to the table, whatever your jurisdiction has, wherever you are, you've got to read down that whole ballot, because you've got, I know just in our area right now, we have a hotly contested MUD board, Municipal Utility District, the water board, the local water board. There is a hotly contested race, man. But that race is going to be at the very bottom of the board. When I ran for school board, our races were always at the bottom. Yeah, the president is at the top. But if you want somebody to come fix your street, that's not the president.
Right.
If you've got a mean dog in your neighborhood, that's not the president. You know, so much of the services that we need and depend on, those are local services.
Right.
State representatives, state senators, utility district folk, school board members, mayors in Texas. The county is run by what's called a county judge, very powerful person. In the state of Texas. And you mentioned one more thing as we move on, and we saw the effects of this. In the last one or two elections, most of the judges in Harris County who were up for election lost. Mm-hmm. There was a clean sweep.
Yes.
A lot of African-American females came into their role
right.
as judges, and you've already mentioned that. And because of that, primarily because of that, the leaders in Austin, which is the capital of Texas, decided there would be no more straight party ticket votes, because most, if not all, of those were Democrats.
Wow.
So they got rid of the straight party vote in the state of Texas, which is akin to voter suppression.
Right.
Now,
that's rampant right now.
The Republicans run the House. They run the Senate in Texas. And the lieutenant governor and the governor are all Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's been lawsuits back and forth, and that's changed now. But tomorrow it could change again.
Right, because so it changed in 2 days.
Yes.
Overnight, like, so, okay, this has been overturned, this has been overruled, okay.
That's why voting matters, and that's why it's important. Yeah, we pick a president every 4 years, but there's so many other folks
that we pick every two years
that are just as important or more important because they directly affect us.
Right.
We'll probably never meet a president, you know, but we see our school board members at the Walmart.
Right.
Depending on what church you go to, you see the judges. They might be members of that church. You see the mayor. You see your congressperson. You know, you see those people. You know,
they're real.
You live in the neighborhoods with them. You go to church with them. You might work out at the same gyms with them.
Right.
You know the same people. Those are the people that make the decisions on the ground level.
You're right.
Yeah. And so we've got to get involved. You don't have to get involved to the level that I've been involved. My goodness. But you can't just vote and then go about your business. You got to get engaged and you got to do something.
Do you see a major lack of engagement from the millennials or even not even the millennials? What is the Generation Zers? Because what I see is exactly what's happening. I'm 18. I can vote. I don't have time. Attention span is right. That of a goldfish. So they go in there, vote straight ticket, not knowing that, hey, this person isn't working in our best interest. Mm-hmm. This person is voting against things that we should have, fundamentally have. That's a right of ours, and they're fighting against that, but they're on the ticket.
Yeah, yeah.
And
so, yeah, it's to answer your question about engagement, yes. Because now there are so many other, I won't call them distractions, but there are so many other things that people can spend their time doing, right? Things that we couldn't. I mean, way before smartphones, I mean, you know, we had those limitations. I mean, I remember when TV would go off at a certain time.
I remember when TV would go off and they would play the national anthem and then you see the snow.
Yeah, so to answer your question, that's a yes or no question. There are some millennials and some young folks who are heavily engaged. But by the same token, there are a lot of them who are doing other things. And they're able to do those things because others have opened doors for them.
Right.
The John Lewis's of the world, the Martin Luther King's of the world, the Rosa Parks of the world, those folks have paid the ultimate price in some cases to make opportunities available. And that's just the way it is. But it's all about engagement. You've got to stay engaged. But then it's also up to those who hold those seats to do their part as far as engagement goes. You know, we know right now in Washington, D.C., that the average age of a senator is between 60 and 80 plus years old.
Wow.
You know, by and large, how can they connect to a 18-year-old? It's kind of
right. I was going to ask this question. You just mentioned John Lewis, Martin Luther King, Rosa Parks. I'm looking at now who are our leaders that have relevance and resonate with the youth. So who's speaking to that 30 to 45 year old? Who's speaking to that 18 to 25 year old? Because it can't be the athletes. It can't be. And it can't be the church leaders, because entertainment, it could be all construed as entertainment. So who are our leaders? Why aren't they being groomed? And if they are, where are they?
On Saturday Night Live a couple of weeks ago, Houston's own, Texas Southern's own, Megan Thee Stallion was on.
Right.
And did her song Savage, and also incorporated Breonna Taylor and the fact that the AG from Kentucky, his decisions mm-hmm. going into the grand jury. And so you ask who the leaders are. Megan Thee Stallion is a leader. Cardi B is a leader. And now we're going back to music.
Right.
We're wrapping this thing
up.
You're right. I think, I don't know if he goes by P. Diddy or Puff Daddy this week, but he said some years ago, vote or die.
Right.
So who's a leader? Anybody who has a platform, you're a leader. You've got a platform with what you're doing. We've got these social influencers now who have not only thousands but millions of followers on Instagram and Twitter. And anybody with a platform potentially can be a leader. I don't think we need a leader.
Okay.
You know.
Because I think that's what's been commonplace.
That's been commonplace. You've
been marginalized into believing that only this type of person can be a leader. It's funny that you brought Cardi B up and Meg Thee Stallion, right? I was listening to, this was a while ago, and I always liked the power that music had to influence. I learned faster and easier when it was something related to music. If you wanted to teach me algebra, mm-hmm. make a rhyme of it.
Yeah.
Put it in a song. I'm going to memorize that. Yeah. And it's funny to me that there's an entire generation that learned, this is going to sound crazy, but they learned mathematics through the drug game. Mm. Ounces, quarters, eighths. It's funny to equate it to that, but it's an entire generation that learned math through that, and they're proficient at it. I mean, they can talk about numbers in a way that you would probably have to get your calculator out and start, you know, working it. But the influence of that and how powerful it was is just like music. If I have something to a catchy beat, a guy put out a video, I think 3 months ago, and he had a song about why your vote was so important. And he broke down the three branches of government. And he broke down within each branch how it works and how it affected you. And I said, this is incredible. But the song was actually hot. And with the song being catchy, had a catchy hook, you memorize everything that he was saying. I don't recall it right now verbatim, but I was able to follow everything he said. And I said, you know what? They said, if you really want to teach someone something, let your favorite artist do it. Because that one song can reach 60 million people. That one song can reach 300 countries faster than you could with a positive message just talking.
So go back to that question about leaders. And I was thinking about this after I saw Megan Thee Stallion's performance. If I'm a young person and I've got an octarian telling me to come vote, 80 plus.
You don't relate to that person.
I don't relate to that. But if I got a Megan Thee Stallion telling me to vote.
Right.
Or you can go down the list.
Okay? Right.
Then maybe I'm more apt to listen, you know, to that versus somebody else who I don't think really is in touch with who I am. And so, again, we have these platforms, and we can use these platforms. And we've got a whole lot more than you and I had coming up.
Right.
Right? And so they're there. It's just we've got to take advantage of them.
You know, you're absolutely right. I think when I was coming up, I used to see the football players that were active in the community or active in some respect. Like you think of Jim Brown.
Right.
But when I was growing up, it was like Marshall Faulk or Kijana Carter. But they weren't active. They didn't have a call to action to say, follow me and do this.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, the thing about athletes is that they take great direction. I don't know if you're a former athlete or if you participated in sports growing up.
I did a little bit.
But, you know, some of the best actors in the world are former athletes. Why? They're former athletes or they're former soldiers because they're great at following orders.
Yeah.
You know, and what I didn't see, you know, I grew up in that a different world era. I grew up in that school days from Spike Lee era. And I'm like, I didn't go to an all-black school. So seeing those movies and being influenced by that TV show and the Huxtables, I wanted to go to an all-black university. So I ended up receiving a scholarship from Prairie View. It changed my world. And when they say it was a different world, it was a truly different world. But that's how much influence those mediums had on me.
So right now you have people going in a million different directions that's saying, look at me, but what are you saying? So if one hand you're saying go vote, but then you're contradicting that by stripping, I'm probably going to look at that in a totally different light. Yeah. I'm going to gauge it, grade it on the curve.
Well, here's what I say. I say, you know, you can be successful, but being successful doesn't make you significant. And, you know, we can look at some folks who I think meet both definitions. I think Oprah Winfrey is successful and has made a difference. It's significant. We certainly know Bill Gates and the stuff Bill is doing all over the world with trying to eradicate diseases and those types of things, pooling money into education. And I think a lot of folks chase the money. They chase the fame. They chase the fortune. But then they don't make a difference. You know, and you've got folks right here locally in the rap game who've done very well, who make a difference. When there's a disaster.
Trey. That's the first person I think of.
Right.
What is it called? The relief gang.
Right.
Trey the Truth and the relief gang.
Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee will call him, and other folks will call him. They don't even have to call them now.
And that's powerful.
Right.
Because for the longest, he was not looked at in that light.
I don't know.
And this is how you change your stars. You change your, you create your own narrative.
You create your own narrative, right.
And that's what I've seen him do. I've never worked with Trey personally, but we've worked in conjunction with one another on a number of different projects. But to see that, I'm just like, whoa, that's significant.
Yeah.
You know, and he is a success.
Yeah.
I even see the things that Slim Thug
does. Another one, yeah.
You know, what he's doing with the community and his home building company. I just see certain things and I'm like, wow, this is incredible.
And you know,
we need more of it.
Yeah, you think about Nipsey.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right?
Right.
And the stuff that he was doing and engaging in. And we talk about athletes, you know, LeBron James. They just
right.
won.
Again. Just You're a Lakers fan? I'm a LeBron fan.
I'm a LeBron fan.
Okay.
But he stepped up his game.
He did.
Right? And the stuff that he's doing in the community now. And then we look this year just, this is sort of a segue, but we look at what the athletes are doing. We know that Kaepernick took a knee a couple of years ago
mm-hmm.
and the backlash from that.
Right.
And
took your livelihood away because.
Right. And how the commissioners now say, well, you know what? Maybe we should have looked at that a little different now.
Do you think that was just theater? Because
political pressure.
Right. Because at the end of the day, the owners are the ones who really make the changes.
Yeah.
He's the puppet, to say the least.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. But you're right.
Yeah. But so we've seen people step up their games. Now, they've been pushed to step up their games. Circumstances have led to some of that. And then we've got other folks who are just out there, you know, banging and making money and doing their own thing. But it's all about engagement, man.
Right.
You know, and that's at the end of the day, you know, you've got to get engaged at some level. You know, you just can't go in and vote. You got to do something, man. You got to step your game up.
So what are some things that people that want to become more active in politics, what are some of those things that they can do?
Well, you know, like what I did, volunteered. You know, when Jesse Jackson ran for president, I volunteered for both of his campaigns. Politicians, elected officials are always looking for folks to volunteer. Then those things, you go from volunteering to it turns into a job. You know, I've been a political consultant. I've been a campaign manager. I still volunteer for campaigns from time to time. I'm in a position now where I can endorse people.
Wow.
But just volunteering. You know, just early voting starts tomorrow in Texas, and going around the corner to to the church and standing up there holding a sign or passing out some literature for somebody that you believe in their cause. You know, you got to do your, as we say in the business world, your due diligence and do your research.
Right.
And find out if your values are aligned with whoever it is you want to support. But just stepping out there, man, and volunteering. I mean, that in itself starts a process. I remember when I first got engaged in political activism, the teachers in Houston decided for some reason, the teachers union, they were striking. I don't know what it was. I don't know the reasons why. This was early 70s. There was a lot going on in Houston with segregation and those types of things. But my elementary school, the teachers were picketing. They were protesting. They had signs. And something caused me to get right in the protest, and I held up a sign, man, and I, you know. And I think back now, that was my first entree into politics.
Wow.
I just jumped in a picket line, man. You know, I felt compelled to do that. And so, you don't have to do a lot, you know. But
you have to do something.
You have to do something. And you use what you got, man.
Right.
Use what the Creator has given you. If you've got a voice, use it. You know, if you're musically inclined, use it. If you're a writer, use it. If you're a social influencer and you've got thousands, hundreds of thousands of followers, use that platform. Whatever you got, use it.
You're right. I think what oftentimes most people don't realize the power that they possess. So whatever they're trying to do falls short because they haven't actualized that. And they just think, no one's going to pay attention to me. I mean, 2020 has been something for the record books across the board. But as much as it's been a curse, it's been a blessing in a lot of ways because you've learned things. You've realized how much power you actually have. Because just to segue back into music, it's forced a lot of musicians to take ownership of everything that they do. I was listening to Gary Clark Jr.
Oh, man.
The other day, and I have a deep diehard ride or die feeling for Gary Clark Jr., right? And my son is like, it's okay. And I'm like, you got to take Gary Clark in his totality, not just one particular song. So I'm listening to This Land.
Oh, yeah.
That's one of my favorite songs, right? Because it's really it's not traditional. It's a blend of hip hop with blues. And it's like it's a fusion. And when I was listening to his interview, he was saying he wanted to take what he had access to organically and move it forward. And when I started listening to that song, the first time I heard This Land, when he starts talking about right in the middle of Trump country, I said, ooh, forget that. I need to see the video because I'm pretty sure it's a video for this.
Yeah.
So I went to iHeart or one of the stations and I found the video and I'm like, oh, this is dope. This is dope. This is Chris. You need to come here and hear this. Yeah, I heard it already. And I'm like, no, you need to see this because the visuals, the impact and what he's saying in that storyline, man, I'm pretty sure it pissed off a lot of fans that were.
Yeah,
Gary
had, you know, Austin's own.
Right.
We talk about the Austin music scene, man, and Gary Clark Jr. is Austin's own. But he had to fight. He had to fight to get that out. You know, he had to fight with his people, man.
Yeah, because I'm pretty sure it was like Marvin Gaye and Berry Gordy.
Yeah.
Not right now. Don't do this right now. You're going to mess up the money. And at that point, it's not about the money. I have something to say. Just because I got a microphone, I don't want to just say the same repeated thing. I have something to say whether you like it or not. And that's where the ownership of what you do comes into play. When you're self-contained, and I don't know Gary Clark Jr.'s situation with his label, but when you're self-contained and you're controlling your own narrative, you can say whatever you want. You can create whatever you want. I learned that power when I built a recording studio in our house. I can create at will. Which means that I don't have to go rent studio time. I don't have to talk to a producer. I can produce, I can engineer, I can mix, I can master, I can manufacture. Yeah. That control allows me to shape my own narrative.
And I tell you, going back to what you just said, I agree with you. If 2020 has taught us anything, it's taught us how to be self-sufficient.
Yes.
You know, when the venues are closed, we've not been able to do any live performances.
Right.
There was a window of opportunity, and that got shut again here in Texas. You've got to, become more self-sufficient. And so 2020, I hope, has taught people that, that they, life goes on, that they can do some things. You got to figure it out.
You have to, because I have a lot of friends who make their livelihood through gigging. Mm-hmm. And that's dead right now. And it's probably going to be dead for the next at least year. And when you have someone in office who says, this is a hoax, it's not real.
Yeah.
And wait a minute, I tested positive for it. And wait a minute, 3 days later, I'm completely cured. You can get through it as well. Well, you're on the taxpayer's dime. You're getting the best treatment from around the clock physicians. I don't really think you have this because your cohorts that have contracted it, they're not out in 3 days. They're not claiming that they're cured and they are immune.
Right.
That's not real. That's at theater. Yeah. This is not a show. This is real life. This isn't a reality show. This is real life. And 215,000 plus people are a testament to the fact that inept leadership leads to ruin.
Yeah. No.
And
no doubt, man. No doubt about it. I am I got me some Buddy Guy tickets at a venue that we were at. Won those. I think it was a drawing or something.
Oh, the Houston Blues Society?
Houston Blues Society.
Right.
And
shout out to Sandra Scott.
Yeah,
shout out. Or HBS.
And I was looking at those tickets the other day because he was supposed to be at the House of Blues. And wow. Then it got pushed. And I said, should I throw these tickets away?
No, I'm holding on to these tickets because you're going to perform.
You will perform, Buddy Guy, who I think is one of the preeminent blues guitarists in the world right now. So I'm holding on to my Buddy Guy tickets when this thing is over. Now, the president will be right about something. It will be over.
It will.
Eventually. He said April, and he said before the election, and he said when the summer comes and the heat
rises, it would just magically disappear. He's still saying that, even now.
Yeah. So one day he will be proven right.
Or die trying.
But, man, this 2020 has been something, but yet and still, we're able to do what we need to do, to make things happen, to use podcasts like this, like what you're doing, to get the word out, and it's all good. It's going to be good. We just got to hold on.
You're right. You're absolutely right. And I really want to thank you for taking the time out to come sit and chat with your boy and really get it in, because what a lot of the time my listeners will say is, I need something more substantive. Yeah. I need something with some meat on it, because we talk about this at work. We talk about this every day when we're driving home from work. You need to talk about something like this. Because there's a lot of us that are on the fence. And I hope with this podcast today that we've helped clarify a lot of things and given you more perspective so that you push forward and you make the best decision that you feel is in your best interest.
Let me leave you with a little bit of, since you teased it, Possum Walk.
I'm all ears.
No, we have no music here, but that's okay. But driving down Possum Walk in my dad's pickup truck. Gonna hit them woods, might get ourselves a buck. Got Big Red in the back, and he's howling to go. 5 more miles to Possum Walk. My dad pulls out a smoke. Lucky Strikes was his brand. Jim Beam his drink of choice. That old spirit warms a soul, 'cause the woods get so damn cold. Almost a Possum Walk, got kinfolks waiting there. Mama dear in the kitchen, smell biscuits in the air. See Paw Paw on the porch, waving to everyone. 'Cause that's the kind of love you find, where it all begun. Been driving down Possum Walk 50 years or so. Got my boy next to me, always ready to go. Generations come and go, but some things stay the same. Places like Possum Walk don't ever change. Places like Possum Walk don't ever change. Possum Walk Road.
And that's how you end a podcast. I want to thank everybody for tuning in to Cuts University and my special guest, Mr. Chris Blue Hat Bell. Thank you so much for that. And to way to end it like that, I got to give you a major pound.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. And I want to invite you back soon.
Let's do it.
Cuts University, we out.